The Quincy Historical Society is once again open to the public at the Adams Academy building on Adams Street in Quincy Center. We're so pleased to welcome here in studio Executive Director Dr. Ed Fitzgerald, Curator Alexandra Elliott to give us all the details. Ed, Alexandra, great to see you in person.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, likewise. Absolutely.
Made the long trek over.
Yep. All those long miles from the Academy.
Yes, yes. Quincy Center, of course, Ed, looks a whole lot different today than it does not too long ago.
It does, yeah. In both ways. I mean, it looks a lot different than it did 3 years ago,
right.
And it looks a lot different than it did last year at this time. I mean, it's alive and people are moving. And
that's right.
Things are happening once again.
What's happening at the Historical Society?
We are open. Mm-hmm. Would you like to talk about how we are open?
Absolutely, yeah. So we opened back in, I think it was mid-August.
For the first time since March of 2020,
For the first time in over a year and a half, I know. It was very exciting.
Yeah.
So we opened, and so it's somewhat on a more limited basis at the moment, just while we're still getting back on our feet. So we're open Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And then we are also have our research library open by appointment as well.
Okay, and how does somebody make an appointment for that?
So they can either give us a call at
773-1144.
And then you can also email us, and I definitely know our email address, at info@quincyhistory.org.
Okay, yeah. And what are the kind of COVID protocols at the Historical Society?
So we just require that when people are inside the Adams Academy that they wear masks. And so we have some on offer as well. We got some for free from Dagny over at Discover Quincy.
Yeah.
So that was very generous of her. So we have masks available for anyone if they forget. Mm-hmm. And we just ask that people wear them when they're inside the Academy. And of course, staff will do so as well.
Okay. And speaking of staff, how's the Historical Society coping with, you know, staffing?
We're doing pretty well.
Okay, because it's a shortage everywhere. You know.
Yes, yeah, yeah. No, we are still a little bit short staff. We're still getting our volunteers back and getting back to full capacity, but we're doing well enough.
Okay, all right. Ed, you know, the story of the pandemic is not over yet, so we don't know the ending. But is the Historical Society planning to kind of document it, if you will, for future generations?
I think we will. The immediate documentation, of course, is, you know, is being done by you and by the library and other resources in town, who I think are probably better set up to catch the immediate data.
Mm-hmm.
I think as the Historical Society, we're going to come into play when it's time to start sifting, probably, which is, first of all, we want the darn thing to be over.
Exactly, yeah.
And then it will be, you know, I think sometime before you have to get any perspective. It was just right before this pandemic hit, we had, of course, kind of just done the 1918 epidemic. So
yes, as a matter of fact, I know the Historical Society, Alexandra, you put together a virtual presentation
on the
1918.
Entirely by coincidence, we had just wanted to capture the 100th anniversary before the pandemic, and then of course, as soon as all of this starts happening, well, suddenly everyone's very interested in hearing that story again. So we reprised the program that we did, and then we also put all of the data that we collected up online on our blog.
Yes.
And so we have a digital exhibit at the moment on our blog about the 1918 pandemic, and including a epidemiological spot map, mapping the spread of the disease through Quincy. So it's very interesting what you can learn from that.
The similarities are amazing
between then and
now. You would think, given all the advancements in medicine and technology, that there'd be a very different story to tell. But really, the human story of the 1918 flu pandemic is very similar.
Yeah.
Indeed, yeah. And, you know, of course, the old cliche is that, I think it's Mark Twain who said it, history doesn't repeat itself, but it sure as heck does rhyme.
It's so true. You mentioned the blog.
Yes.
That's something new.
It is, yes. That was another project that we started over the pandemic, and that's been very successful.
Great.
It's been very well received. So that is the Quincy History blog.
Okay.
And that was one of the ways that we started to communicate with our, you know, our followers and our friends during the pandemic, was so that we could still, you know, be a part of the community and be able to do our work and share Quincy's story.
Yeah. And how is that? How do people access that?
So that is quincyhistory.net/blog, or okay. You can just Google the Quincy History blog, and it will be right there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is it interactive? Or
to an extent, yeah. Okay. So there's a number of articles on there, but mm-hmm. then there's also the digital exhibits. We have two at the moment. Okay. One about the, like I said, the 1918 influenza pandemic, and then we also have one about Howard Johnson's, a little mm-hmm. bit, a slightly lighter topic.
Okay.
Yeah. So those are a little bit more interactive.
Yeah.
We're always working to create more content for that as well.
Okay, so this is something you think will continue
post-pandemic? Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
It's just another thing. So many organizations think have found, you know, they found ways to quote-unquote pivot, you know, electronically to communicate with members or guests or customers or what have you. And a lot of that, I think, is going to stay. You know, mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. not going to go away. And even organizations that like the Historical Society that have been around for over 100 years,
you know, are finding the same way for 100 years.
Finding new ways to do things.
Right. I mean, you know, we had been doing, I think since it was first formed, they had been doing live lectures.
Right.
And, of course, that was not a possibility. So in cooperation with the Thomas Crane mm-hmm. Library and one or two on our own, we started doing the online Zoom mm-hmm. lecture. Mm-hmm. And those are actually quite, they were very successful, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
I think we had I think it was 130 attendance to the first one we did, which was the 1918 pandemic reprisal program.
So, I mean, in many ways, you probably would have never had that many people show up for an in-person.
We can't fit that many people in our building.
Right.
And that's something also that we saw over the course of the pandemic was that we got people who could not come out to many of our programs attending the online one. So we're definitely looking for ways in which we can continue to offer an online, filming live programs and putting them up online, because we want to reach as many people as possible with our programs.
Yeah. So I think, you know, especially over the next couple of months, that'll be the way we go with things that we're doing. I think we will be relying very much still on Zoom and YouTube as the way to communicate with people.
Yeah. Well, the convenience factor you can't beat, you know, and the increase in accessibility for folks is unmatched.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing quite the same as being live in a room.
Oh, no question.
But until that time, and once that time arrives, I think we will try and continue, as Alexander said, mm-hmm. we'll try and continue doing both, a
hybrid model, to borrow a term.
That's the newest term.
Right.
Yes, a little bit of both. But exactly. You're right. You cannot replace an in-person experience, either like we're in here now in a studio talking together, or getting the ambiance of the Adams Academy building, you know.
Yeah. And even just, you know, I know, speaking for myself, just as a presenter, just having the crowd and feeling and knowing, okay, I can see people are falling asleep, I should probably hurry the section up, or I can tell, people are really interested, I should maybe go on.
It's true, more. Eye contact and body language. You can't get through a two-dimensional screen, you know, it's just not feasible. So it's nice to have you open again, I'm sure.
Right. Oh,
have
wonderful.
You found, Ed, that folks are happy to come back in?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's still some wariness out there in the public, and until people get vaccinated, I think that's going to, you know, continue to be the case.
Sure.
But people are happy to come back. They're happy to know we're there.
Yeah.
And we've got people coming in. We've also still got people coming from not just locally, but we've had people coming in from other parts of the country.
I wanted to ask about visitations.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I know that the national park, I don't think it's going to open this year. It doesn't look like anyway.
They are doing, I believe, limited tours in which you can kind of tour the grounds, and they will take through the grounds.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether they're going to.
I know the birthplaces are also.
Those are having scheduled
tours. Just with the birthplaces. I don't think the old house is open this year.
Yeah. No, it's not. No. And I don't think it's going to. Does that impact the Historical Society?
To an extent, I know that we've had the park asking us a few times, are you open? Can we say? Because we have people wanting to, you know, learn the history of Quincy, so they want to send them to us. And so, of course, now that we're open, we're happy to have people come in.
Yep. That's great. Yeah. So it's nice to hear.
Absolutely.
The newest addition to, I guess, Quincy history, if you will, is the new Welcome Center.
Yes.
The Monroe Building.
Oh, it's fantastic.
That is now a city building.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Has the Historical Society played a role in getting that up and running?
Not so much. That's mostly been on the city front.
Discover Quincy folks?
Yes, and they've done a great job. And we were there for the opening, and it looks beautiful. So that's a great addition, and it's a great location.
Yes.
So we're, of course, very happy to have them directing people to us, and it's going to be a great resource.
Yeah, it's the northern entrance to the new Hancock Adams Common, really. So,
exactly.
People coming off the T station, of course, right there as well. So visibility factor is fantastic. You're now permanently entombed, if you will, in the Adams Academy building, right? Because the city bought that too, Ed.
Well, not yet.
Oh, okay.
That's still in process.
Okay.
Yes, I think we're very happy that the city is making the move in that direction to start the process of taking the Academy and really ensuring that it remains as it's a national landmark. It's important to local history, it's important to national history, it's important to the history of architecture in America. So it's a building that really needs to keep its integrity and be preserved. So we're delighted the city is doing this.
Can you tell me anything about the plans for the Adams Library, if you will?
I know that the interest continues.
Yep.
It's pretty clear that it's more than pretty clear that John Adams gave the books to the town of Quincy, now the city of Quincy. It's a long story as how they wind up at the BPL, but we're not going to get involved.
Right.
So, we'll see what happens. I mean, I think there's a very good argument that they belong back here, and we'll see how it goes.
The mayor, I know, is trying his very best to work out an agreement with the Boston Public Library to get the collection back into the city.
Right.
I spoke with him this morning, and he said, so far, it's been crickets. so no movement there just yet. Would it be different from the Stone Library at the Adams Park?
Yeah, it's they are similar but not matching. They're both essentially books that the individual collected.
Yeah,
father and son collected.
Okay.
John's are, I think, just because of time, they're maybe a little more. There are some that are probably rarer. Yeah,
because
there are a few in there that he had that go.
They're certainly older,
considerably
right?
old. Yeah, and considerably older than his lifetime too, but not many.
Okay.
John had a habit of arguing with people on the pages of the book.
Yes, known for that.
Exactly.
Yeah, in the margins.
And as argumentative as he was in other circumstances, I don't think John Quincy did that.
Interesting. So well, he was a diplomat, so.
Well, so supposedly was John.
Well, right. Interesting.
Maybe not as strong.
How big is the collection, the John Adams
it's
collection?
It's about 3,000 volumes.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, volumes are, a volume is a volume.
I mean,
a volume can be a quarter inch thick or it could be 3 inches thick.
Right.
So in terms of shelf space, it's a little hard to figure, but it's about 3,000 books.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Which is, for a guy in the 1700s who,
There weren't a lot of books published, first of all, right?
Well, right, and there was nothing else to divert him. Particularly here, here in Massachusetts, he couldn't even go out to the theater.
Oh, sure.
You got to read and you got to go to church, and that was your entertainment.
So you need to have, like we have 3,000 TV channels today.
Yeah,
you need 3,000 books to read. Alexandra, you mentioned that the museum is open. What's in the museum at the Historical Society?
So right now we have our permanent exhibit, which is of stone ships and mines.
Yep.
Stone ships and mines. So it's just a general overview of the history of Quincy.
Good.
So starting from very early Native American history and all the way up through the founding of Dunkin' Donuts and Howard Johnson's and some of the more modern things. So and we cover all of it. So there's quite a lot packed into a room that's, a good size, but still, it's a lot of history for a small space.
Okay.
So we have some, of course, Revolutionary War artifacts as well. One of my personal favorite items in the museum is the front door key to the house that used to be on the property of the Adams Academy, which was John Hancock's birthplace.
Oh.
So that's one of my favorite pieces in the museum.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Who knew that there needed to be a key?
I know.
At that point. Interesting. Mm-hmm. And is there fee or
nope,
charge?
It is. Okay. It is. Of course, we are always happy to take donations if people find that suitable, but it is free to the public.
Okay. Very good. Mm-hmm. Any plans to update it or change it in the future?
Oh, we're always thinking about that. Yeah. It's but we're still we're getting over the pandemic before we really get to that.
Let's get it reopened first, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But of course, in a not too distant future, Ed, Quincy is going to be 400 years old.
Mm-hmm. That is true.
Yeah, and I'm sure you're playing a big part in planning that.
We're involved, and we're thinking about things to do on mm-hmm. our own, and we're as always. Are willing to, more than happy to provide any consultation with the city that they would like us
right.
to have. So, it's a significant anniversary.
Mm. What happened in the 300th anniversary?
300th anniversary was a big blowout, actually.
It was was really, it really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it was big. They had a huge parade. It was a week-long festivity, a huge parade. They had what was very popular at the time and really lasted up to the 1950s, but historical pageants. So Pageant Field mm-hmm. Is where they had the pageant.
Okay.
And everybody and his brother and sister were in it. From the whole point was everybody got to dress up and play a historical character. So you had 300 or 400 Quincy people in this pageant, and they played five nights or something up there.
Wow.
So they, it was a big deal.
Okay.
So they got 5 years to match it. 4 years.
See, now it's 4 years. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I know things are starting to happen already. We're going to see the General's Bridge dedication. Mm-hmm.
General's Bridge dedication is coming up.
In the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, yeah. And that's recognized an important part of Quincy's history and current history as well.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely. And then later on this year, I know that the original town hall, right?
Yes.
The stone building has a exhibit right on the main yep. floor there as well.
Yeah, we're working for probably some consultation on changing that exhibit space up and trying to do something in relation to the generals and the
right.
military history. It's impossible to do a comprehensive mm-hmm. military history, but to try and highlight some of the human stories involved in the amount of military service and civilian service that's gone on here over the time.
Yeah. Yeah, and does it also give the Historical Society kind of another venue, if you will?
It does, but it's really the city's space.
Sure,
it's really, we'll do whatever needs to be done done there. But it's a chance, yes, to do things that fit in that particular space, or and have a particularly civic theme, I think, is what mm-hmm. is what the mayor's intention is for that space. And we help out when we can.
Yeah, well, I'm assuming you have things in storage that have not
exactly.
been seen in many, many
exactly.
years, that could be highlighted at certain times
right.
of the year, certainly.
Yeah.
Are you involved at all with the Shipbuilding Museum and trying to kind of promote the USS Salem?
We do what we can. At the moment, they're actually giving us some help with a couple of the projects we're working on.
Oh, so, okay.
It's good to have a we enjoy good reciprocal relations
sure.
with them and with the Adams and with the Thomas Crane and the church and all of those.
And the Quincy Homestead.
And the Homestead, mm-hmm. yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
Yeah, I know the new.
All of them.
President's Trail, I guess, just recently
yes.
debuted.
Yeah.
Trying to tie all those sites together.
Right.
So as you mentioned, they're kind of disjointed on their own, trying to make it a cohesive story, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And particularly for out-of-town people, because one of the good things about the trail is, it's opposed to saying, okay, well, go out of our door and then turn right, and no, don't take the first left, take the second left,
that's
and
right.
then make your third right. You can
if
say,
you don't
just
know.
Look for the sign and follow the thing on the road.
Right.
So
very much like the Freedom Trail in Boston.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
You can tell somebody who lives in Quincy where to go, and they know exactly what you're talking
right.
about. You tell somebody from South Carolina, they're going to end up, in West Quincy.
Right.
So that's nice. That's nice to see, actually. Yeah. So you did help. We did help
with some of the information and stuff.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
Alexandra, the blog.
Yes.
Is what's on it right now?
So right now, some of our more popular topics have been. We did a blog post going into John Adams and Josiah Quincy Jr.'s involvement during the Boston Massacre trials, so corresponding to the 250th anniversary of that last year.
Yeah.
So that was very interesting. We also have some biographies of Solomon Willard. We're talking a little bit about the Sacco and Vanzetti ties in Quincy as well, because we have a 100th mm-hmm. anniversary there. But our two most popular topics have been, first of all, we featured a article that one of our volunteers and board members, Wayne Miller, wrote for our newsletter, talking about a man by the name of Joseph Lee, who was an inventor. He was formerly enslaved, I believe, in South Carolina. I think it was South Carolina, and then ended up opening a number of restaurants in Massachusetts, and including and some of his guests included, you know, various presidents of the United States. So very successful businessman here in Quincy. He operated the Squantum Inn, and then his family operated Lee's Inn in Squantum.
Oh, okay.
And then our most recent post has probably been one of our most popular, and this is detailing the history of one of the first Chinese restaurants in Quincy. So going into one of the very early Chinese American families, the Eng family. Eng family.
Eng, okay.
And their restaurant, the King Joy restaurant, was the longest name that it had. It had a few names over the years, but the King Joy. And then that was located at various points in and around Hancock Street, and then on Cottage Ave and Chestnut as well.
Really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it bounced around a few times, but it was very, very successful.
You know, folks think of Asian immigrants maybe just in the past 30, 40 years.
Right. No. It goes way back. I think the first time you see Asian immigrants being referenced as living in Quincy is 1880, I think, is census we get.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's very, very long history.
Okay.
Very, very deep roots in the community.
I can see why that would be the most popular.
It got, I think it had something like 500 or 600 views already, which has been fantastic.
It's a lot. And it's pulling from all over, too. I mean, that's the interesting thing. It's not just pulling Quincy people. I mean, you're getting...
I've had people comment, people from Texas. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why they're interested in Quincy history, but I'm always happy to hear it.
So how did you kind of get led down that path?
It was entirely by accident as well, which is really what's interesting, is we had someone call in, essentially do a cold call looking for information about his family. His name is Chris Toy. He's the son of, the grandson of the proprietor of the King Joy restaurant.
Oh.
So he was looking for information about his grandfather's establishment, and at first, you know, I thought we weren't going to have very much, but as I kept digging, I just kept finding more and more and more information. The story just kept getting bigger and more interesting, because you also, on top of the, I think it's the second official Chinese restaurant, but it's certainly the most successful.
Okay.
There was only one beforehand, and it closed after about a year being open. So this is a great story, and then within the family, you have, I think, four members of the family served in World War II.
Really?
You have the first Chinese-American graduate of Quincy High School. It was the eldest daughter. You also have a number of the children worked for Quincy in various civic capacities.
Okay.
You have the first Asian American teacher in Quincy, the first Asian American nurse at Quincy schools, and just some tremendous stories within that. So part one of that story has been already put up on the blog, and I'm currently working on part two, which I'm hoping to have ready to publish in the fall.
Okay, all right. So, I mean, all these online databases now of folks researching their family trees.
That has been very helpful.
Yes, so popular.
That is exactly what that has been extremely helpful.
Okay.
So it's partially through Ancestry.
Yeah.
That I've been able to track some information there and confirm it and track some other people. I was also using Genealogy Bank to get access to Patriot Ledger during the pandemic. Of course, when the library was closed, otherwise I'd be here at the library digging through.
Yes.
So that's been very useful. And then the Old City directories, which we actually have in our archives.
Okay.
So that sort of combination of all three of those sources, I've been able to just kind of chip away and have tracked down the story. And it's been a really tremendous adventure, really.
A history detective.
Indeed. I say that public history is half storytelling and half gumshoe detective work.
Well, it's interesting. I think folks, when they hear the Quincy Historical Society, they think, oh, they just have all the information about the Adamses, right, and the shipbuilding and the granite industry.
Right.
This is modern,
yeah,
modern history.
Modern history, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're really committed in trying to rededicate ourselves as to doing that. When we had the 125th anniversary 3 years ago, we kind of said, you know, we want to take 1893 and move forward, mm-hmm, because a lot of that history, as Alexander's demonstrated, the community is fundamentally different than the earlier community. I mean, this is a period of tremendous change,
yep,
and you know, it becomes a much more dynamic city from that period on, really up through the present. It's, as we know, very dynamic, right? All sorts of changes are happening,
yes,
currently. So that history really needs to be discovered and documented and kind of put together. And we have bits and pieces of it. People know very well-known parts of it, like the Four River story, the Howard Johnson story, but stories like this that,
yeah,
are really essential to what makes the city the place it is, need to be found and kind of found individually and then hopefully eventually kind of stitched together.
Integrated into the fabric of the city's story,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's interesting. You know, the latest 2020 census, of course, just showed how diverse
exactly
the city is. Over 30% now, Asian population,
but
a very fast-growing Hispanic population,
exactly,
African-American, Middle Eastern, Eastern European. So it's really... it's a microcosm, I think, of what's going on across the country.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a real experiment in democracy here, and so we need to start addressing all
sure
of that. Yeah.
And you didn't forget the old Quincy, though.
Oh, no.
With the Book of Days.
The Book of Days.
Yes. Tell me about that, and tell me about the next version.
Well, we did the Book of Days.
Yes.
Jump in whenever you want on this. We did the Book of Days for the 125th, which was in 2018.
Yeah.
And the idea was, rather than try and pick any one thing, to kind of give a smorgasbord of things that happened keyed to specific dates.
Yes.
So from the profound to the downright silly wound up being in there.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it worked very well. And what we found is we keep finding things that we hadn't stumbled on before.
Yeah.
We keep saying, oh, we've got to do another Book of Days.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I do that every morning. One of my part of my morning routine when I get into the office is I read the daily Patriot Ledger, and anything that's, you know, I think might be an interesting entry, I write that down and to save that for potentially another volume.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. And is this available at the...
Absolutely.
And this is still, it is still in print, and we are more than happy to sell a copy to anybody that would like one.
Okay.
And it's still... Still a good read, I think.
I agree, yeah. As I told Alexander before we went on, I look at it and use it every day on our morning show here at QATV.
We should acknowledge the three people who really worked.
Certainly.
Four people, I guess. Dan Simmons, Wayne Miller, Corinne Waite. That's it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Three of our stalwart
Researchers,
volunteers, board members. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Anything else we should touch on right now? I know everything is tenuous now with the pandemic still with us, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But the big news is the Historical Society is open.
Is back and figure, look for us in October. We should be making some more splash.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
We look forward to that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You're very welcome. QuincyHistory.org.
QuincyHistory.org,
And again, the phone number is 617-773-1144.
Yes.
All right. Thanks. Good to talk to you both.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
You're very welcome. And thank you for watching AM Quincy. I'm Joe Catalano. We'll see you next time.